Hello, everyone. Welcome to NHL Induction Class. I'm John Shannon. Today on the show, someone who morphed from one of the greatest offensive junior hockey players to one of the greatest defensive hockey players and became a Stanley Cup champion at the same time, Guy Carboneau. Guy, welcome to the show and congratulations on your induction to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Thank you for the honor and thank you for having me.
So I talked about in the introduction that you were a prolific junior player. Your last year, you scored 72 goals in Chicoutimi, yet you were not going to be an NHL player at that time and be a goal scorer, were you?
Well, I think it just happened along the way. I think my goal and my dream is always to play in the NHL. I think I was always an offensive player everywhere I play, and there was no different in junior. And then I think when I got drafted, 2 years that I spent in the American League, learning my tools, kind of trying to be a more complete player. And, when I got to Montreal, the ice time wasn't there. And then when Jacques Lemaire came in, his vision was to kind of build like a defensive line to play against the best line on the other side. And just happened that I was the one that he chose. And so we went from there. But it's not something that, it's something that you plan or anything like that. I think he just gave me more ice time. So I was kind of happy.
Before we talk about Lemaire, because he obviously had a huge influence, was it always your dream to play for Canadians?
A little bit. I mean, young kids from Quebec, the only game that he had on TV was Montreal Canadiens on Saturday night. So obviously it was one of my favorite teams.
And what was it like to be drafted? Were you disappointed you weren't drafted in the first round?
No, I had no expectations.
You didn't?
I think social media and televisions and all those things, in 79, you had a few phone calls before. There was no meetings. There was no one-on-ones. I think a few teams were interested, but that's all you knew. And somebody called they were looking for me, telling me that I just got drafted by Montreal, and they found me on the golf course.
You talked about that. We're now in the day of scouting and combines and psychological interviews. You went through none of that as a junior player getting ready to be drafted?
Yeah, that's right. There was none of that.
Wow.
Those things. I'm not sure about the first round or, first guys that they get drafted if they had meetings. But, in my case, there was no going somewhere for draft or they didn't even call me and say, go on the plane and be in the stands or it's nothing like that. So it was just a phone call.
I am looking at a list of coaches. You talked about Lemaire. I'm looking at a list of coaches that you had both in junior and in professional hockey. It is an illustrious and different list when you think about guys like Orville Tessier, who you had in your last couple of years in Chicoutimi, Bert Templeton and John Brophy in Halifax. Oh,
yep.
My goodness gracious. And then Claude Ruel, Bob Barry, Jacques Lemaire, Jean Perron, Pat Burns, Jacques Demers, Mike Keenan for your time in St. Louis, and obviously Bob Gainey and Ken Hitchcock in Dallas. Who had the most influence on you?
I think they all had. Obviously, probably Jacques Lemaire had the most, just because of, I thought, like I said earlier, he's probably the one that kind of, like I said, when I said that his vision was to kind of build a team and having a defensive line that could play against the best line. And that's where, that's when I started to play a bigger role on the team and having more success. So, and then I think for the rest of my career, I was always been known as a defensive forward. So I think that was probably the guy that had the most influence. But all of them at different level, I think, had something to do with the success of my career.
The two Stanley Cups you won in Montreal, 1986 against Calgary, 1993 against Los Angeles. Which one was a bigger surprise to you?
I don't know. I mean, I think, in 93, probably. You know, I think the one in Dallas was built, and I think we were building for like the 2 years before, prior to that.
Sure.
I think we were always for a couple of years, like we were one of the best teams in the NHL. And at one point, everybody kind of picked us to win. So I don't think that was a surprise. 86 wasn't the case. I thought we had a good team, but you know, we needed to have a few things around us to happen. And we were, you know, the way we played during that time was pretty good.
Well, when you think that it was you and a couple of young guys, Claude Lemieux, he made his first impact that year in many ways. Patrick Waugh made his impact in the NHL. And then there was a veteran guy like Bob Gainey, who I still remember being lifted off the ice, in, as I recall, in Calgary with the Stanley Cup. That was a special moment in Calgary when you guys won. I was actually there. I was in the building. That was an unbelievable five-game series, including your buddy Brian Skrudland's eight seconds into overtime.
Well, I think you need all kind of things to win, to be able to win. I mean, I'm not saying that every one of them is a surprise, but, you know, a lot of things have to go your way. It's a long road. It's four series of seven games. A lot of things can happen, injuries and things like that. So, obviously, everything has to fall in line. And, you know, when it does, it creates those moments. And that's why, like, over the years, I always said that, like, I played with some unbelievable players. I made some unbelievable friends. But, you know, the one you win with, they always seems to be a little closer all the time.
Let's go back to your time growing up. Who was your influence as a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, in making you a hockey player and you wanting to play hockey?
I think I always wanted to play hockey. You know, as soon as I started as a kid, you know, I was always outdoor. As somebody that played all kinds of sports, different sports, and you know, I thought I was a pretty good athlete. But you know, every time I was on the ice, I was a different person. Competitive level was always higher when I was playing hockey. So something that I had in mind all the time. And just along the line, just had concentrated my effort and everything I did towards that. And lucky enough, you know, 79 when I got drafted. But you know, there's a lot of players that you meet that have different effects. You know, it was Alain Côté when I played junior. Mm-hmm. You know, when Scudamy is somebody that I really respect, big guy that you know. Worked extremely hard on the ice and off the ice and made a career out of it. And, you know, you get to the NHL and you start your career with a guy like Bob Beeney and Mario Tremblay and those guys. So, I mean, everybody's has an influence everywhere.
Well, and you grew up at a time you talked about there was only one game a week on television. So you were you might have been able to catch a game on radio. Who as a child was your hockey-playing idol? Who did you like being when you were out on the on that pond in Septil?
I think everybody kind of, like, I've never had the chance to really see Maurice Richard, but, you know, I think the name was always there. But, you know, Jean Béliveau, definitely. I think was on top of my idol. You know, he was one of my idol. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as I got older, obviously, Guy Lafleur and you know, because we had the chance to see Montreal a lot.
In those days, when you were a kid, all they did was win. All they did was win, you know? I mean,
exactly, and I liked to win, so it made it easy for me.
And what was it like when you went to the Forum, even as in your 20s, and most of these guys were around the building?
Getting into the Forum was, like, unbelievable. You know, it's for me, like, I never had the chance to go to the Forum before or even meet an NHL player. You know, I think today they have like development camp. They they talk to you. They bring you into the rink. You know, if there's somebody there, they let you meet them. None of those things happened for me. So, you know, I got drafted in '79, and I got to training. And my first day training camp, you know, you walk into the Forum.
So that was your first day ever in the Montreal Forum?
Yeah, that was my first day in the Montreal Forum.
Wow.
And then you kind of sit down in the room. You know, that, in those years, they used to put four teams together of 20 players. And then you sit beside guys like Guy Lafleur and Mario Tremblay. And then you end up on the ice being on a line with Steve Shutt and Guy Lafleur. So that was quite a day. And you just try to sink it in, but at the same time show what you can do. So that was tough.
The last Canadian-based team to win a Stanley Cup was a team that you were on in 1993.
Yep.
My memories of that playoff run, the five-game series against LA was something, but really it was all your overtime wins that year.
Yeah.
And your series against the vaunted rival Quebec. And when you consider you grew up in Eastern Quebec, that would have been an interesting situation for you, be playing against Nordiques.
Well, every game was, you know, an event in itself. I keep selling stories. You know, we would play the Quebec Nordiques on a Saturday and have two teams to play on Tuesday and Wednesday, and nobody wanted to talk about those two teams. Everybody wanted to have, you know, what's going to happen on Saturday. And it was such a huge rivalry. And, you know, being, like you said, being from Quebec in the middle of it, there was some unbelievable moment. I mean, sometimes might have went overboard a couple times, but all in all, I mean, it was so good to be part of that.
You're understating might have gone overboard. It truly was the Battle of Quebec.
Yeah.
It truly was. The emotion between the two cities, between the fan bases, between the media, were there times where you could look across at the other team and say, hey, can you believe how out of hand this is getting?
I mean, you think about it after the fact.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're so pumped. And I think everybody was, you know, maybe the players in the room between periods or before the game, we would pump each other, the coaches. There's always question about, you know, maybe we should stop doing those things. But, you know, then the rivalry comes back again, and then you don't want to lose.
What did Pat Burns do for your career?
Like I said, I think everybody, every coach that I had,
sure,
had an effect on my career. And Pat was no different. You know, he was somebody that was brought up just kind of.
But by the time Pat became coach, you were one of the cornerstones. You were a veteran player. Would he have leaned on you more to communicate with some of the younger guys?
I think they all did. You know, I think obviously when I was a kid, starting in my career, like, you know, guys like Bob Gainey and veteran like Larry Robinson were more in that kind of role. But, you know, I think you learn from that. And, you know, as I grew older and having more experience, I think I always had a good relationship with my coaches. Obviously, when you're a captain, those are things that, you know, that I would say comes naturally, but it's part of the job is to have a relationship with the coach and telling them, you know, what we think happens, should happen, and then they make the decision. But, you know, I had enough. I think, you know, and that's why I respect all of them. I think there's good ones, bad ones. Some are better than others, but they all have something to bring, and they were strong enough to kind of be able to come to us and to me sometimes and ask me questions and react out of that.
All I know is that in your last year in the American Hockey League, when John Brophy was your coach, your penalty minutes went up to 124.
Yeah, no, he was somebody that really helped me at the time that I needed it. I knew my first year in American League that there was kind of normal. At that time, it was kind of normal for a young guy to kind of go in the American League and learn the tools. And I had a pretty good season that year, and I thought I was going to stay up in the NHL. And then, you know, when I got sent down, I was pretty you know, down on myself. And John was just signed by the Canadiens to coach in Halifax. You know, I didn't know who he was or anything like that, but he took me aside right away and really kind of helped me get in weak focus. And, you know, like he told me, I always remember something he told me. He said, you know what? He said, you're good enough to play in the NHL. Don't prove to the Canadians that you can play in the NHL. Prove the NHL that you can play in the NHL and you'd be up there. So I always remember that. And I'm pretty grateful to him for believing in me.
The history of Canadians is remarkable in our sport. One of the great traditions is the famous line out of Flanders Field, to you from failing hands, we throw the torch, be yours to hold high. What was it like to hold that torch as captain of the Montreal Canadiens?
Amazing. That's said this a million times. Like I've been drafted by the Canadiens, being a kid from Quebec and having a chance to play in the Forum with such an elite players and for an unbelievable team, I wouldn't want to start my career anywhere else. So obviously, being a captain and a veteran, mostly a veteran, but mm-hmm. Being a captain, I think I always took pride in personify that and helping everybody to be successful.
You had a brief stint in St. Louis, the 1 year, the shortened year, the 48-game season.
Yep.
But what was the allure in Dallas? Was that Bob Gainey again?
Well, I think, again, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And I think I was in St. Louis, and then Bob Basson broke his leg.
Right.
And I think Bob at the time wanted to start building a winning team. And I got the call that I get traded to Dallas, and from there, it's just every year we just kept being better and better. So obviously, Bob had a huge influence on that.
It's probably satisfying to you to an extent that you are being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame with a teammate in Sergei Zubov.
Yeah.
What did Sergei mean to you and? You can tell us firsthand, because I used to hear tons about what a great player Zubov was, but there were hordes of great defensemen in the league when he played. What was Zuby like?
I don't know. Like, he was, I was, I think if you were a player and you saw this guy play every day, you're amazed at the talent he had and how easy the game looked for him. And obviously, we were playing guys like, you always say, it's easy when you play on a good team, but, when you play with a bunch of, like, you got Mike Modano and Brett Hall and all those guys, it's not always that easy.
No.
But Zuby made it look easy. He can skate out of trouble, never put himself in trouble. Always seemed to be able to make the pass that nobody else can make. He was really a fun player to watch.
You talked about some of your teammates in Dallas. I know it was a different time and a different generation than when you were in Montreal, really. How did you cope with that group of players versus kind of how Canadians and players on wearing the red, white, and blue would carry themselves? It was a totally different place in Dallas, wasn't it?
Well, it was a different time in my career. I was 34, 35 years old at the end of my career. I knew that maybe I wouldn't play every game, and I was just getting myself ready to play every game. But I knew that I needed to be – I knew we had the talent and the leadership to win the Stanley Cup. It was just trying to put all those things together. So all the experience that you gain over the years, that's what you're trying to bring every day. And I think to win, you need all kinds of different players, good ones, bad ones, young ones, older ones. Mm. But I think if you remember, like, we had such a leadership group there that was unbelievable. I mean, we had guys, Mike Keane, Skoulin, Craig Ludwig.
Hold on, they all have something in common here, though.
Yeah. All
from the Canadians
exactly.
And brought there by Bob Gainey.
Exactly.
That winning attitude, that philosophy. I mean, it's not an accident.
Exactly. No, I don't think it is a connection. I think that's what Bob wanted to build, and that's why it was fun. It was, you know, but you didn't have to do that much there. I think he was just trying to be the glue. Everybody was, you know, had to say what he had to say, and you know, sometimes we had bad games or something was going wrong. It didn't take long that somebody would, you know, stand up and say something, the right thing, and so it was a lot of fun to be a part of that.
What was your relationship with Ken Hitchcock?
He was good, actually. I never had, like I said, like, I mean, there was coaches here or there that says sometimes the wrong things or act the wrong way, and as a player, you want to be successful, and so you kind of think that they're wrong,
right?
And that you are always right. You know, with age and experience, you learn that, you know, they did that to try to win. And so I always respected that. But I always had a good relationship. I think I was confident enough, maybe cocky enough to be able to kind of open the door and go see them and talk about my issues. And so, you know, whatever it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do is we always kind of came out, and that's what I said. Sometimes, you know, you just don't understand what they're trying to do. And that's the toughest part as a team. You know, the coach tries to build a team, not individual. And so everybody has to understand that that's what he wants, and everybody has to follow it, because if you don't follow it, then you can't win.
I'm going to ask you a coaching question in a second, but don't you think part of your role was that you did have enough confidence that you could open that door? Wasn't that, in the end, wasn't that part of what Gainey saw in having you join that team?
Probably. I mean, you know, I think, you know, we played together long enough.
Sure.
And we were roommates, so we kind of knew each other enough. I think he knew what I could bring. And I think that's what he was looking. You know, we had guys that were strong egos, and that was, they were successful everywhere else. But, you know, to build a team, you need, you know, a bunch of individuals, but pulling the same way. So,
you know, we talk about what it's like to win the Stanley Cup. Your name is on that cup three times, which, I mean, every Canadian boy, or now I think every boy worldwide, dreams about. But what was it like to lose? You lost in 89, the only time in the history of the Montreal Forum that Canadians lost at home, on home ice. They lost to Calgary.
Yep.
And then you lost on home ice again in 2000 when Jason Arnott scored the overtime winner. What was it like to lose the Stanley Cup?
It was hard. A reporter asked me the same question this week.
I had a good one.
Yeah, I had a chance to think about it. But, you know, like I told them, it devastating. It's such a long road. You know, you got to go through 82 games to be in position to be there. And then after that, it's 2 months of being really working hard and being lucky. And then once you get to the end, to lose was hard. For myself, you know, if I had the chance to win three times.
Mm-hmm.
So the two times that I lost are not as bad as, I can't imagine if I had to go three or four finals and lose them all.
Yeah.
You know, I look at my son-in-law. He had a really unbelievable career.
Brendan Morrow.
He's got a gold medal. But, you know, he came up with us in 2000 and lost in final. And on his last year of his career, he lost playing for Tampa Bay in the final. So he never had the chance to win the Stanley Cup. So that for me would be a lot harder.
Hey, but you talked about he has something that you couldn't get, and that was an Olympic gold.
Exactly.
What would that have meant to you?
That would have been unbelievable. You know, I've never had the chance to play in any international.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I wasn't good enough. I don't.
Gee, you're going in the Hall of Fame. I don't think that's the issue.
I don't know, really. I've asked that question to myself a few times, but maybe the timing wasn't right. You know, I'd never been into the World Championship. That for me was that for me was good because that meant that I was always in the playoffs.
Sure.
But in an international competition, I don't know.
To that point, you played more than 1,300 regular season games, and you played 231 playoff games. That's basically three more seasons.
Yep.
You played so anybody says that, you know, you started your NHL career in 1980 and you finished in 2000, you say, no, you should actually add three more years to that. And you know darn well those are the three hardest seasons too, because your body takes more abuse in the playoffs than it certainly did in the regular season.
Definitely. I mean, the playoffs are so hard. And traveling, you got to remember, too, in those years, we used to play four games and you know, back-to-back game almost. So it was drooling and it was hard, but it was so much fun to be part of.
And not many charters early on.
No
charter airplanes.
Well, playoffs.
Playoffs. Had, but playoffs, yeah. Hey, after that last loss to the Devils in 2000, you decided to retire. What was your – did you know you were going to retire?
Yes, I did. I did. I think I was still in good shape. I never had problems. I think it was just – I found the days in between games getting longer and longer, and I had less patience with the people around. Never had problems to get pumped for games day and things like that. But I think, you know, it is just after the holidays, around January, I went to my wife and I told her that it was going to be the last year. And then, you know, never really told anybody. And after the game, when we lost against Jersey, I threw all my equipment in the garbage.
What?
And I told, the players that I was it. I'm retired. No, and I never went back at it after that.
Wow. Well, what was it like to play with your son-in-law?
It was fun. You know, he got abused a few nights, but it was okay. No, he was fun. He was such a good player and a good kid. I have a really good relationship with him, and it was unusual. Maybe it was part of the decision to retire. But I would never tell them that.
Oh, too late. So after a couple of attempts at being an assistant coach, you all of a sudden are the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. What was your thought process in taking that job?
I don't know. I think, you know, when I was a player, I think I was always somebody that kind of looked at the games, you know, different ways and trying to make it better. You know, I was somebody that, like I would say, I was a student of the game. I was always trying to find better ways to kind of be a better team. And so it was always in the back of my mind. You know, after I came back here, after I retired, Réjean asked me to work here. And then after a couple of months, when we fired a coach, he asked me if I wanted to coach. And I said, no, I'm not ready to do that. But if you find somebody that, you know, that I can work with, maybe I'll go behind the bench. And that's where Michel Therrien came in.
Sure.
So I was an assistant coach for a couple of years before I went back to Dallas. And I was happy there. I was working with Doug Armstrong, doing some GM things and traveling a little bit. And then Bob Guiney called me and said, you know, I think you should come and coach. It took me a few days to think about it because I never, you know, being an assistant coach is something. Being a head coach in the NHL is a different thing. And then I made the decision to come back here in Montreal and finish the season as assistant coach with Bob, and then with the purpose of being the head coach the year after, and that's what happened.
Interesting. I mean, you had a winning record all three seasons that you were the head coach.
Yep.
Had the style of, when we talk about 2019, how you have to be a master motivator. The players are younger. Could you coach then? Could you have coached two decades before when you played? And would you want to coach now?
I mean, you know, everybody adapts. I look at Claude Julien. Everybody's, you know, kind of think that he is an old school guy, but he adapted to the two. You know, I think you just... everybody has a strength and weaknesses, and if you're strong enough to go out and pick, you know, and get the guys that you need to be surrounded with that can help you in your weaknesses, you become a better person and a better coach. I think the situation here today is different with the young guys. It's such a young guys league now, with not a lot of experience. And they all want to play, they all want to win, but they always still want to make a lot of money. So, I think, was I a good coach? I don't know. That's not me to judge, but I was a better coach at the end of my, when I got fired in my first year.
And now you're on the dark side.
Now I'm on the dark side.
And you are in, and I say this privately, I say this publicly, you are in the toughest hockey media market in the world. Not only can you be criticized in English, but you can be criticized in French.
In French.
and it is as tough a place to play, and you learned that yourself, and it's a tough place to be in the media too, isn't it?
I don't know. I never see that way. Even when I was a player, I think I always enjoyed being here. I understand what a lot of the players and the people think. It's a tough place to play if you don't play well and if you don't work.
Yeah.
I think if you do if you can do both, and there's tons of examples. They put guys like Chris Nyland and Mike Keane and myself on a pedestal because we were harking. When we're working. I mean, last year, I take an example here. Nobody was happy with Jonathan Drouin, not because he doesn't have a talent, but we didn't think he was doing enough. And now this year, he's working hard every game, and everybody applauds him. So it's pretty easy. There is no place in the NHL or in professional sport that is fun to play when you lose. It doesn't matter. Right. Ask the Cowboys, ask the Yankees, ask anybody else. So Montreal is no different.
Yeah, and I think you're putting the team in the right company when you think about dynasties and impact. I mean, Dallas Cowboys, yes. New York Yankees, Montreal Canadiens.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I guess you'd put the Boston Celtics or the Lakers if you were a basketball fan.
Yeah.
Couple of quick hitters. Why'd you wear 21? Anybody special?
Not really. I mean, that's the number they gave me when I got to Chicoutimi in junior, and I was stuck with that number.
And when you think about the fact that it's 19 years after you retired, you became eligible for the Hall of Fame in 2003.
Yep.
Do you ever sit and turn to somebody at the hall and say, "What took you so long?" Or
nope.
Or did you ever at a certain point did you think they had forgotten you?
I don't know. I think I felt in the category that was, I wasn't sure. I thought I had enough to be in it, but I didn't have the stats of Wayne Gretzky or Brett Hall or Paul Coffey or Ron sure. Francis and guys like that. So I thought I had a chance, but it's not something that. That was really thinking through the years, except that day when the list came out. But I can tell you one thing, though. Now I'm really happy because I don't have to think of it anymore.
Well, when you consider you won the Selke Trophy as the league's top defenseman three times.
Yeah.
Very few people who have won major trophies are not in the Hall of Fame. So to win it three times and not be in the Hall of Fame would have been wrong. I mean, there's no question that you belong in the hall. Toughest centerman you faced? Is there somebody that jumps out?
Well, I mean, Gretzky and Lemieux for sure. I mean, they were such a dominant players.
You play Mario a ton more times than you would play Wayne. You'd only play Wayne once or twice a year. You'd see Mario maybe four.
I know, but like they're so dominant, and for. The more you have a reputation of being good defensively, the more pressure you have to kind of make sure that those guys don't have success when you play them. So, it wasn't the case with most of the other guys. But, Peter Stastny was one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Messi was one of those guys where not only they were so much good, they were so good offensively, but also tough physically. So that makes my job a lot tougher.
Shot blocking, you became your one of your signatures.
Yes.
Were you ever really thinking when you did it?
I mean, always in the back of my mind, I mean, you're always thinking. I think, you know, I've kind of, I worked at it and I thought about it. And you know, it's something that became natural enough to, I didn't have to think it too much, but it's, you know, I mean, nobody knew more than me that it was dangerous, but I mean, sometimes you do things or stupid things and you don't think about it. But.
Well, you're just a typical hockey player. You'll do anything to
exactly.
win.
Exactly. That's all I'm trying to do.
And so on that, who did you sit in the room with and you looked across and said, holy smokes, this guy wants to win more than anybody else?
I would say Patrick Roy and Chris Chelios.
Two good picks. Just like, I mean, you've mentioned six guys in the last 3 minutes: Lemieux, Gretzky, Messier, Stastny, Waugh, and Chelios, and they're all in the Hall of Fame. So, congratulations, Guy.
Thank you.
That's Guy Carboneau on today's edition of NHL Induction Class. Thanks for listening. And just a reminder, if you want to rate or review this podcast, feedback is always appreciated. Until next time, I'm John Shannon. Thanks for listening.